The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Welcome to the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. I'm Nathan, and I'm joined as always by Marcus Blankenship. How you doing, Marcus?
Good, Nathan. How are you?
I'm okay. How's your week been?
It's been great. It's been snowing like crazy here. How about you?
It's been raining like crazy, so it's chucking it down outside, but I'm okay. I'm inside. I got the fireplace lit, and yeah, nice and cozy inside. But yeah, I think it's going to be going on for about another week or so, which is it's good. We need the rain. It's been so dry here this winter. It's been terrible. All the lakes have all dried up, and we need that water.
Well, that's great. I became a grandfather for the second time this last weekend. Ooh. So yeah,
you didn't mention that last time we spoke.
Well, it just happened a few days ago. So it's a very recent new discovery. This is our second grandchild, but you know, anytime that happens, it's brings a whole range of emotions. So,
oh wow, congratulations, man! That's awesome.
Thank you very much. You know what? Like, I am so glad though that I, at my age and where my business is, that I can actually take 15 minutes or 30 minutes, or hopefully even like maybe even 2 hours, and go spend time with family. Because there was a time in my life where I didn't really prioritize that way.
Yeah. I can relate to that. And when you said about taking 2 hours, I'm sitting here thinking, 2 hours? I just take the whole day now. Don't get me wrong, I'd have to make that up if Michael's listening. But the option is there. The option is there. Yeah, I remember way back in back sort of 10, 12 years ago, you'd be working crazy sort of hours. The freelancing, I'd be doing longish hours, I think. But then when Noosey first started, you know, when it first began, and of course emotions were high and passion was high and we're trying to get off the ground, I was working silly hours. In fact, I was one of those guys that I would look forward to the weekend finishing so that I could officially get back to work on Monday morning.
I know that feeling. Yeah.
That's pretty crazy, right?
Like Sunday, you hope nobody notices that you grab a pad of paper and a pen, and maybe you like start making a list for Monday. You're like, here's what I'm going to get done on Monday. You know, I can't wait. And I'll just get up at 4 a.m. on Monday and work until midnight. And you always, at least I always told myself, this is just for a time. It turns out that's true, but the time was like 8 years, not like 8 weeks or 8 months. At the time, I thought, this is a temporary effort. And as soon as we make it big, then I won't have to do this anymore. I can't tell you how many times I told my wife that. As soon as this gets off the ground, like it was some giant albatross airplane that was moving, lumbering down the runway, as soon as it gets off the ground, then I won't have to put in this kind of effort.
Oh, so you were at the point of making excuses then?
Yeah. Well,
so you were saying no, because so I guess the family noticed, right, that you were putting in all these absurd hours.
My children, after, like in hindsight, they tell me, Dad, you were late to every sports event, every concert, every meeting. Every one of them has stories where I picked them up 45 minutes late from school and they were standing there waiting. And it's just, I feel terrible about it. They didn't understand, but I was
breaks your heart, man. I imagine hearing that now, it makes you feel,
pretty small. Yeah. Yeah.
But at the time, when you're in that moment though, you're not conscious, are you? I don't think of what's going on outside, because you're so invested in that moment, in that time, in whatever's going on, whatever you're building. I don't know whether it's just like this fog comes down or this curtain comes down, but everything else kind of gets pushed back, you know. It's not something conscious either, is it? I don't think.
No, I mean, it really creeps up on you. Like, I remember at first we didn't have hardly any work. And so the one project that I had was just, I was just working like a madman, and I was working full time. And so this was all on the side, which meant, you know, mornings and evenings and every weekend. But as soon as as soon as we started to get any sort of sales traction, which was maybe 8 or 9 months into our little adventure, I just couldn't say no to anybody. I just didn't say, well, I didn't feel like I could afford to. Money was tight. I had to get this thing off the ground after all. I don't know if you ever remember that, but like work would come in and wasn't great work, but you just hustled to get anything you could, no matter what the proposal, no matter what the client wanted. They were the boss. They had the money. And it wasn't long before that was the thing that was just driving me, was there was just, I had really overcommitted.
We hear this story a lot as well, don't we? Because you said just a few minutes ago that, you know, you were sort of promising to your wife, you know, when things pick up, I'll ease back, you know, I'll take my foot off the gas and we'll just be able to enjoy it. You know, we read so many stories about these, you know, famous founders at agencies and startups and stuff. And, you know, that is their life for years and years and years. And that line in the sand gets pushed back continually, doesn't it? It's like that moment of success never quite arrives. It just continually gets put off and put off, and you keep working crazy hours. And I think it's kind of weird, and I'm sure it's the same in the States as it is in the UK and as in even in a lot of the Eastern countries. You know, like I think is it Japan where they just have insane working hours. Like,
yeah,
the idea of success, a successful business person is the person who's chained to their desk for 12 hours a day. And why is it that we have this perception of success as being someone who is insanely busy? It's crazy.
You know, I have theories about why we think it's so attractive and why we think we need to do it, but I'm sensing maybe you had a different journey. Have you experienced this where you definitely nailed it. You get lost in it and the whole world kind of fades away. But that, did you have a time when you just worked like a madman?
Yeah. I mean, As a freelancer, I always worked, like I said, pretty sort of, they weren't horrendously long hours. I'd say they were pretty, you know, pretty standard work day, certainly for Spain anyway, because obviously we have lunch here late, lunch and dinner here later, et cetera, and life is a bit different. But once Nusi came along and I sort of, it lit a fire underneath me, and, you know, and I was really passionate about getting this idea going, it was when everything else kind of ceased to exist. And any spare second I had, I would be working on Nusi, whether that was on the laptop, whether it was on, you know, pen and paper, whether I was out walking the dog thinking or whatever. And I would literally just work stupid hours every day and on the weekends as well. The weekends were an inconvenience because it was time supposedly away from work. And by Sunday, I was actually just champing at the bit to be starting officially on Monday again, so I didn't have to feel guilty about working again, which is
right.
which is kind of a strange way to feel about work. And I remember getting into trouble a lot, you know, with Nuria, and our daughter was little then, probably, what are we now, probably about 3 maybe or so, you know, and obviously kids at that age are high maintenance as well. So I remember getting into trouble a lot around that time for being kind of absent, you know, and I worked at home, you know, and I was still absent because I was up in the office with the door closed, and any kind of distraction was an annoyance. For the Nusi part of things, it was easy for me to see that this was something I was passionate about, so something I wanted to work on all the time. I didn't particularly have a goal of, okay, so when this is successful, whatever that success might look like, then I know I'll be able to sort of take my foot off the gas and relax, and I'll be able to have a family again and, you know, enjoy free time and do things. I think part of the problem as well for me was that I didn't actually have a hobby outside of work. My hobby was designing. So any free moment I ever had, I would be designing. A lot, same as a lot of developers, you know.
Yeah, Michael's that's how
always
I was.
Exactly. So Michael's always developing little apps and things, you know, because he said to me literally last week, you know, your hobby now is cycling, but my hobby, you know, absurdly enough, is coding. So I think if you don't have anything outside of what is your passion, which is your business at that time, I think it becomes even more difficult to tear yourself away, because as terrible as it sounds, sometimes family isn't a big enough a reason for you to get, you know, unchain yourself from that desk.
You know, so much of what you said just really hits a chord, especially the part about being absent and getting into trouble. And because I would make promises about what I was going to do or, you know, where we were going to be. And I love the way you described a weekend. It reminded me of weekends where I would try and sneak in work because I would make some promise like, nope, I'm not working this weekend. It's I'm just spending it with the family. Well, the family would go to Walmart and say, oh, or, you know, or go shopping and you want to come, Dad? And I'm just going to relax. Oh yeah. As soon as they're out the door, my laptop's open and I'm answering email. And of course when you have a smartphone, which we all do, you can sneak in work all the time. Right.
Yeah.
And remain highly distracted, whether it's, especially if it's anything about you've got clients asking questions or you're trying to just kind of figure out this next marketing thing or whatever you're doing. There is so much to do. I don't think I ever knew what I really wanted, but I just assumed if I worked really, really hard for a really, really long time, then something good would happen. That unfortunately is not actually how life works, but because I didn't know what I wanted, I didn't have, like, in the big picture, all I knew is I wanted to, quote, be successful and, quote, make good money, whatever those things mean. But I sacrificed my health as well. I gained a lot of weight. It was my hobby. So I was sitting in a chair, tremendous amount of many hours. And yeah, it's not the best stories I have to tell. I guess if you're listening, Nathan, what advice do you have for somebody who's sitting there shaking their head going, okay, great, this is me. And now Nathan says he can take the whole day off. So he's made it. Like, his life is perfect. But what advice do you have, or how did you turn things around?
I think there are definitely courses of action you can take, and probably pretty much most of those are documented as well online, you know, and how to get away from the desk, how to relax, you know, this, that, and the other. But, you know, you can read those blogs and until you go blind, none of them are going to help you until the right moment in your life comes along. For whatever reason that is, maybe your wife turns around and says, right, Marcus, Nathan, this is it. Or you get away from that desk, or, you know, we're done.
Or we're done. Yeah. It's almost come to that.
Yeah. And so I think there has to be, you either have to want it bad enough, or there has to be something in your life that pushes you away. Because, you know, if you do have that kind of addictive personality, mentality, and drive to want something to succeed, then it's very, very hard, I think, to even notice that you have a problem. You know, the same as most addictions, working, I think, is an addiction, you know, and it, like, is, any addiction, it's very hard to notice you have an addiction because you're addicted, you know, and
yeah, you don't see what you don't see, right?
Exactly. And for me, life just, or rather, it just worked, it took its path. Luckily for me, so Noosey was beginning to grow. All I was doing was Noosey. As luck would have it, I think I must have been having a conversation with Nuria. And like you said, I spent all my time sat down. I did no exercise. I certainly wasn't fat. And probably most people wouldn't have even said I was overweight. But I was kind of round in the face, you know. And I think 3 years ago now or so, Nuria said, well, you know, why don't we get you a bike for Christmas? And so we did. We went down to the local Decathlon, which I guess is like a big sports chain. Uh-huh. Found a bike that was a nice color because I knew nothing about bikes. Can I fit my leg over the top? Yes, I can. That'll do. Thank you. And that's where it all began for me. So I suddenly discovered that there was a life outside of the computer, outside of Noosey, outside of being sat down and plugged into a digital world. And the bike kind of took over for me, and I was able to take a step back and realize that there is something else. Of course, that only takes care of one part of the problem, because while I suddenly found that I didn't have to be plugged in every day, there was still this mentality that, well, if Noosey is going to be a success, or if I'm going to be a success or feel like I'm successful because of Noosey, you know, we still need to get that growth, get these features, get this, that, and the other. And you still only have a limited number of hours in the day. And I think what changed for me as well, and I mentioned this again the other week in one of the podcasts, was reading Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yes, that's right.
And I remember other people saying as well, I think Brendan Dunn said it once as well, is like, you can work 8, 10, 12, 16 hours a day if you're completely crazy. But the fact is that after sort of 4 hours, 5 hours, the work you get done after that point is not going to be, you know, it's not certainly not going to be your best work. I would much rather sit down for 4 hours now, get a completely, how can I say, 4 hours of really solid work done and feel happy about my day and then just be able to go off and do whatever I need to do, taking my daughter from school, gymnastics, cycling, whatever, and come back the next day and then do another 4 hours, 5 hours. I don't feel that need anymore to have to sit there for 10 hours a day to get the same result. And it was the same result. I can get all that done now in so much less time. I think the difficulty is that when you're working for someone else, that isn't an option, is it? I mean, even though you know you're probably only highly productive for half the day, you don't have the option of stepping away and saying, right, boss, that's it. I'm not going to be productive anymore today. So I'll see you tomorrow morning.
I was just thinking that for most people, if you're listening and you have a real job, you know, this is not just for, you know, people who work for themselves. I worked in a big company. I know that getting 4 hours of real work out of an employee, or frankly, out of myself, is about the maximum you're going to get. And so anything outside of that is butts in seat, coffee time, pointless meetings, errands, checking Facebook, reading email. Even today, though, I struggle because I love what you just said. I struggle not to hit my desk about 8 a.m. and be here until about 6 p.m. and then look back and say, what did I really do? When it boils down to it, I oftentimes could, I think, have gotten it done in 4 hours of focused, planned, intentional work. And then I could have been out running around the property or go visit my grandkids or whatever. I still feel how do I admit this? It still feels a little weird to me to be out shopping or out doing things in the middle of the day. And I feel like people look at me like, you're too young to be retired.
Okay with that. I've got no problem whatsoever with that.
Like the stores, our grocery stores during the middle of the day are filled with the elderly and the retired. And here I am. And they're looking at me like, well, you're a little young. Oh, maybe you're unemployed, right?
He's unemployed. Of course he is. Yes, he's unemployed. Yeah, that's the one.
You know, the addiction thing also really struck me. I have a pretty addictive personality. I sort of latch on to something and get really excited about it. So I know one of the things that helped was similar to what you were talking about. You don't know how you're acting from the inside. So if you're listening to this, I'll just sort of speak to you that if you suspect that you're not hitting a work-life balance, that you're disappointing other people in your life, that you're working too much, no matter what situation you're in, find someone who you love, who loves you, is probably your spouse or, you know, someone, maybe even a close friend, and just ask them what they see in your behavior. Ask them, does it look like I'm working too much? Do you feel like I'm sacrificing too much for this business or this project? Just start by getting feedback. Some of you might say, well, I know what they're going to say. They're going to say, my spouse is going to say, yeah, you're working way too much. But at least you're opening up a new conversation with somebody who it is affecting. You can't pretend it's just impacting you. And I think that if you start that way and you just listen, you might find that some of that is actually motivation to change or to alter your behavior or see yourself differently. The times, just like you said, I didn't like to admit it, but my wife had to come to me and say, this behavior's got to stop, or guess what? You're not going to like the consequences one way or the other. And that phrase, getting in trouble, I felt like I was, quote unquote, in trouble for about 7 years. And it's frustrating because at the same time, your brain is telling you, but I'm doing this for everybody. I'm doing this for the common good. The reality is I was actually doing so much of it for me to feel good about myself, to feel successful, things like that.
Apart from the threats of imminent divorce, is there anything we can do to try and limit the damage, to try and reduce that addiction to work? One of the simple things I did, I took my work mail off my phone.
So, how did you do that?
Yeah. I think I went back and forth a few times, but I actually haven't had it on my phone now for a couple of years. That was one of the biggest things for me because work has always stressed me. If there was ever any problem that came up and I was stupid enough to open my work email at 9 o'clock at night whilst I'm watching the telly and a problem comes in, that would be my night ruined then because I couldn't relax until it was fixed. Michael is a lot cleverer than I And he would have his work sort of limited to, I'm working until now and, you know, until tomorrow, that's it. So I would be stuck with this problem. And it was incredibly stressful. So there was no way around it other than just write work mail off the phone. The only thing it's on now is on my laptop. That's it. So I forced myself to, I force weaned myself off the work mail. So that was one big help. What about you? I mean, were there any particular steps that you took?
Yeah, what you talked about, and I'm going to phrase it a little bit differently, but I think you fell in love with something else. You got a hobby, biking. And for me, I believe it was photography. And
oh, wow,
I started getting into photography and it, you know, not just, it's easy probably with bikes too, but certainly with photography to get a little obsessed about the gadgets and the brands and all the stuff. But just getting, like when you take a picture, you have to focus entirely on something else. And I like nature photography. So it got me outside and it gave me a sense of accomplishing something. It gave me a sense of creating something, of being involved deeply with something different that didn't have anything to do with money and didn't have any like rational, like my CPA wouldn't say you need to be photographing more because I wasn't going to sell these. I just loved doing it. And it just brought me a lot of joy. And so it was something that I could look forward to. If I sort of told myself, well, if you work 4 hours, you can go do a nature walk and take the camera for an hour, which was also good for my health, but I was a lot more motivated to go out and watch my kids' sporting events because for me it was like, oh, an opportunity to practice my photography skills at the same time. And they thought I was really excited about them. I'm sure I was, but it was a win-win.
Yeah. But I think that getting a passion outside of what is your current passion, which is work, I think is a common theme for people who actually manage to stay away from being a workaholic. Because I'm sure there are those that sort of dabble their toes in something and that keeps them away from the desk for a while, but then they end up going back there. I mean, how many years have you been doing photography for now?
About 6 years.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, and I don't do it as much with the farm and the grandkids. I am glad I know how and I enjoy it. But nowadays, okay, this is the weirdest hobby. I'm going to tell you my weird hobby, okay?
Okay.
I can't believe I'm going to tell everybody. I love driving my tractor. And
okay, that's awesome.
I get on my tractor. I bought a used Indian Mahindra tractor, and I am so excited when it snows because I get to go out on the tractor. I will have gravel and dirt delivered just to move it around.
Nice. So that's the best thing I've heard all week.
Oh, there is something about being on the tractor and it's cold. It's 8 degrees Fahrenheit and I'm just out there bundled up and I have the biggest smile on my face. It feels so good. I just love it. And I don't know why. It's a new skill. It's outdoors. It's a challenge and there's never any money involved. So I enjoy it.
I was just thinking while you were saying those things, especially about the photography and with me with the cycling. So it's a distraction, right? Or it serves as a distraction because like you said, with photography and me, the kind of mountain biking I do requires complete concentration.
Yeah.
If I don't want to kill myself. So for me, that was the key because it would be the only time when I would actually, my mind would go blank. So, or in theory, go blank, you know, I would completely switch off because I would have to be 100% focused on the trail that I was descending. And so I think that for me, at least, was something that was key because I could just go out riding my bike and perhaps be thinking about 100 things and about work. And of course, that wouldn't work because I'd still be, you know, at least mentally tied to my desk. So
yeah, maybe, there's a concept. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on. I was going to say, yeah. So that passion outside of your desk, I think perhaps if it's something that does take up those neurons, you know, does do the same thing as your job, but, you know, away from the desk, it consumes your mind at least for a while.
A friend of mine, Jerry, is done a lot of work with cognitive psychology and, and he's a really smart guy and this kind of stuff. And the other day, he also trains dogs and he heard my dog barking and he heard my wife she was saying, stop barking, stop it. Stop it, because he was barking at the mailman, you know, and she was trying to get the dog to stop barking. And he heard this, we were on Skype, and he said, you know how you can always get a dog to stop barking? And he said, take the dog a ball or a bone? Because, and I was like, that's rewarding the dog. And he said, well, don't think about it that way. What you've got to do is get the dog doing something, not stopping something. And if you get the dog doing something that's incongruent with barking, and that was the word he used, and I really like that word. And he said, get the dog doing an incongruent behavior to barking, because no dog can chew on a bone and bark. They're doing one or the other. Like it's, and for me, that idea of I'm really bad at stopping habits, it's much easier for me to instead choose a habit that doesn't, that isn't congruent, that doesn't really work with the behavior I want to stop, and replace it with a new habit. So taking pictures and photography and being tied to your phone, you can't take pictures while you're tied and reading email. You can't ride a bike while you're writing email, or you'll die. So these activities weren't about saying, I'm going to eliminate something. They were about doing something that's incompatible with the behavior you want to change.
That's like that conversation was, you know, planned that you had with that friend of yours. That's awesome. For me, that sums it up, because I've never been able to just leave something. It's always had to be something to take its place, to stop me doing one thing, to allow me to do another.
Yeah, it's really hard to, when you stop, at least for me, and I've tried to stop a variety of addictive behaviors, I feel like I'm holding on, white knuckling it, I call it, like where you're holding on to something, or you're doing your best to run from it, whatever it is. There's nothing joyful about it. It's just awful. Like you're trying to eat less or whatever, but trying to eat differently, and I can eat just as much, or trying to replace the time at my desk with time on the tractor. Those are easy things, because I'm going from something I enjoy to something else I enjoy that's incompatible with the behavior I don't like. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if that's helpful to people, I do think it's much easier to find something to take your time rather, and also, this is my opinion, Nathan, you might have a different opinion, try and choose something that is not financially tied to your livelihood, to your business. I have found if I were to have started making a business to sell photographs, my brain would engage differently than if I were just doing it because I love it.
Yeah, I can see that. I was actually going to ask you before, did it not ever cross your mind that the photography could become a business?
Was it? It did.
What did you do with that thought? You just decided it wasn't going to happen, or?
Well, no, I mean, I talked about it with my wife, and I just kind of rattled on about it. And I talked to enough people that I talked myself out of it. For example, I went to some photography meetup groups and user groups, and I would talk to people who sold their work, and how's it going? And they're like, well, you know, I sell two photographs a month and for $40, and I've been doing it for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so this is a business that is way harder to get into. And fundamentally, I kind of decided I don't want to turn things I love into a business, or I'll have to leave them eventually. So maybe I get to keep photography because I can balance it. Mm.
Yeah. And I had a similar thing as well, because I did end up collaborating with a company that does adventure tours around Spain. But through that experience, I was with them for a year. I was able to see that, boy, is it a tough business. The bike industry in any format really is really, really hard to get into. And I just looked at it and I thought the number of ways you can make money are many, but the number of people that actually make any money at this, and who have been doing this again for years, like you said, with your photographer friends, are just very, very few and far between. So yeah, so thankfully it's just stayed as a crazy obsessive hobby for now.
good deal.
But it takes all my money. But I think it's been a pretty healthy trade-off. And I think generally the family is happier with that as well. I mean, I lost nearly 10 kilos in the first year of cycling. So
wow.
Going away from being a proper couch potato to, you know, a pretty active person. So yeah.
And it won't be long before you'll be able to do that with your family if you choose to. Maybe not the extreme part, but it's I see families riding bikes together all the time.
I would love to. They're not so keen, but yeah, we'll see what happens in the future.
That's right. You never know.
So I think the whole you know, we kind of, you know, lay ourselves flat, you know, before the idea of the successful person being a person that works every hour that, you know, under the sun. And I just think it's such a, looking back now, you know, and, you know, as we said the other week as well, knowing what I know now, it just seems like such an erroneous way of working. And I'm just so glad I'm not there anymore, because I don't have that feeling of guilt that I'm not plugged in, you know, 24 hours a day, and I can actually go and do things. We can go shopping and be associated with the unemployed and the OAPs.
And that's fine.
Who cares? So, and I realize it is different for people who work in full-time jobs, but again, these are things that we can help wean ourselves off. And I think it's a different journey for everyone, obviously. But
We'd love to hear about people's journey. If you want to write us and tell us, where would they write into?
Yeah, for sure. Write in, tell us, podcast@thecreativebusinesspodcast.com, and tell us about, you know, your struggles with working endless hours, or how you've managed to kick those endless hours and working the weekends. And we'd love to hear your experiences on that as well. Yeah, I mean, I think it's been pretty succinct today, isn't it? Usually we're gabbing away for nearly an hour.
Well, hopefully it was to the point. And after all, maybe people can use the other 30 minutes to go do something they enjoy.
Yes. Write a list. Everything I can do to get away from this desk within the next 6 months. And
that's a great place to start. And start dreaming about
it. Yeah, and find a hobby, an all-consuming hobby that takes all your money and time.
That's right. And I think there's a little bit of this truth here of spend a little of your hard-earned money on yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's just $10 a month on a hobby or whatever it is, it doesn't have to be a lot, but your business needs to pay you back for all the work that it's doing. All right. Hey, great show. Thank you very much.
I feel like this was like really short and sweet today. I almost feel like we're ripping people off, but I think we've said what we need to say, so we'll leave it there. So hope you have a good weekend, Marcus. I hope you how long have you still got snow for now? When does it sort of start to disappear?
We'll have it for 2 more months.
Oh wow,
at least.
Okay, that's a long time, right?
Yeah, it'll be here till May, so ooh, I'll get to use the tractor, and then it'll be summer, and there's always lots of tractor work in the summer.
Oh, you know. All right, man.
All right, well, don't drown with all that rain.
Yeah,
okay?
I'll try not to. You have a great weekend, man.
You too. Bye-bye.